a beautiful winter morning and a wonderful drive up here. I made it early, so it's got to be a good drive, right? So my name is Edward Axley, Chairman of the Construction Service Commission. I would like to call this meeting of the Construction Service Commission to order. It's now 9 o'clock a.m. on January 30th, 2019. This meeting is being held in room 101, south of the Owen Walker Building in Salt Lake City, Utah. A little bit different than before. Wi-Fi in here is phenomenal. You need it. Notice of this meeting is provided as required under Utah's open meeting laws. In compliance with the Utah open meeting laws, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. The recording will be posted to the Utah Public Notice website no later than 3 business days following the meeting. In compliance with the Utah open meeting laws, written minutes will also be prepared of this meeting. Appropriately marked pending approval minutes will be available to the public no later than 30 days after the closing of the meeting. Approved minutes will be posted to the Utah Public Notice website no later than 3 business days after approval. The following board, committee, and commission members are in attendance: Edward Axley, Chairman, Russell Lamoureux, Dale Thomas, Merlin Taylor, Joseph Jensen, and Jason Peterson. The following committee members are absent: Ross Holiday and Rob Allen. So sorry. Rob is in attendance.
Story of my life.
As long as you're not called late to dinner, right? The following individuals representing Doppel and the Department of Commerce are in attendance: Chris Rogers, Ann Naglin, Deborah Blackburn, Bobby Main, and Corey Ann Fawcett.
And then the only others are Stephen Duncombe and the division director, Mark Steinigle, and did you say Robin Barktel?
No.
Okay. So that is welcome.
Well, we welcome everybody. We welcome any visitors and interested persons at this time. Please be sure to sign the attendance report for the meeting and identify yourself before speaking, and the attendance roll is just back there. As courtesy to everyone participating in this meeting at this time, we ask for cell phones, pagers, and other electronic devices to be turned off or changed to silent mode. Board motions and votes will be recorded in the minutes. And so let's start. Let's now proceed with the agenda. Right there. Thank you. Okay, so we'll first move into administrative business. Well, we just did that. So we need to approve the minutes from November 28, 2018. So if you can take a minute to review those minutes. And if we can have a motion to approve when ready.
Second?
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes approved.
Mr. Chair, we have a new commission member. I should have mentioned Mr. Merlin Taylor. And welcome to the commission. And then if you're okay with it, Mr. Chair, we'd like to swear him in and then kind of have him give a minute or two to introduce himself. Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So
if you want to stand and raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Merlin Taylor.
I, Merlin Taylor.
Having been appointed as a member of the Construction Services Commission.
Having been appointed to the as a member to the Construction Services Commission.
I do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
I will support, obey, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office.
And I will discharge the duties of my office.
With fidelity.
With fidelity.
Thank you. Welcome to the commission.
Nice to be here.
Would you like to take a minute or two to just introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm blessed to have the time to devote to something like this. I've I'm just starting my second round, actually my third, with Lane Recovery Services. So after 8 years, I'm back on that in August. And I also have served nearly two full terms with the Licensing Review Board with the legislature. And I'm happy to be here. I'm a retired builder, so I was licensed for 35 years, and still in the business as a consultant. They call us expert witnesses, but I don't call myself that. But I work with attorneys and insurance companies all day long, doing the exact same thing I did as a builder. Only not erecting the buildings, just doing that on computers and reading pleadings and that type of thing. So I'm glad to be here, and I have a business card to go. I've only given Dale one so far. But,
I'll pass it around.
I have one for everybody. It'll make a lot of sense as the year progresses. Let's put it that way.
He grows a white beard pretty long near the end of the year. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I apologize for skipping over that. I missed the last meeting, and I just assumed you fit in so naturally that you were sworn in last time. All right, so let's move into the investigation update. And I'm moving to Bobby.
It's been continues to be busy. We have 88 closed cases last month, 44 citations issued. We got a number of administrative actions taken, as you can see in the notes section of the report. The first one we'll talk about is a licensed contractor who paid almost $120,000, failed to pay the subs, amount of over $52,000. This case has been referred up to Chris for agency administrative action against the contractor. As you see on the next one, the licensed contractor failed to take out building permits on a project for approximately 11 months. Was taken a small claims court, a judgment was obtained against the contractor. This has also been referred up to Chris for administrative action. He didn't fill his duties and basically did a minimal amount of work for the money that he was he took in. The next one is a licensed contractor failed to pay a supplier $60,000 in materials. Didn't have the money because he was sitting on a home, couldn't sell it, and so he was unable to get the money for materials. And during the investigation, found out the qualifier for the company is living in Hawaii, which would be nice to do that. The case has also been referred to the Bureau Manager for Administrative Action. And finally, licensed contractor bid a job at $36,000, was given $18,000 up front, and the homeowner had a lien placed on their home for the contractor failed to pay for a lot of the things that he had collected money for. We're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of unlicensed and licensed contractors out there collecting money. They'll get half up front and they're not fulfilling their obligations. And so we are filing criminal charges like we started a couple of years ago with a little more communications fraud. And Chris has really been going after them hard and heavy through you guys. And so that's appreciated. So it never ends. It's going to get worse and worse. So do you have any questions for me?
Thank you, Bobby. That's a great report. Thank you. Let's move into the probation update.
Okay. All right. So this month we have 56 probationers. There's a couple of people that I have had to work with. The first one is Barbosa Dream. You probably know from the last couple of reports that he's 5 years old. I rejected alcohol. Just kept on getting more and more, and so we issued an order of agency, and he will be on the agenda today for revocation. The next is Howard Plumbing. He was supposed to be, his probation ends tomorrow, but he does have current pending felony charges, so he has signed a stipulation amended it where we have extended his probation until we find out what the charges are. So, Jerome Stone, this is the same as the first positive for alcohol, and so. In the stipulation, they are informed that they have any new charges. And we will watch and see where the charges are from there. And the last report, and we've sent out numerous reminders, and he has not sent anything in, so we have to pay him $250. Any questions?
Can I make a comment, Mr. Chair? Although we have a lot of probationers and we put a lot of people on probation, a lot of them are compliant, as you can see. And so a lot of them are sticking by the rules and sticking by their probation. We just have a few that don't do that. And there's a reason why we put people on probation, and one of the main reasons is to help provide some notification to the public about their prior misconduct and any limitations they have on their licensure to protect the public. So that's why we have a lot of probationers, but also a lot of them compliant.
Yes.
Any questions or anything? I think this report looks fantastic.
Yes.
It looks like it actually works very successful.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much. So let's move into the CSD statistics update.
This will be fairly quick. This has been a running thing that I've been doing merely just to give you a window into some of the workings of the audit team as well as the applications that get processed. We canceled our December meeting. That's why we have a blank for that. But so as the last month that we had our meeting in November, one figure you'll notice is applications going up a lot for November. That's because of the plumbing and electrical individual license renewal season. So we alternate. The even year is the individual plumbing and electrical license, and then the odd year is the contractor license renewal. So this November, you will see a huge uptick in applications as well. And the audit team, as well as the audit team, continues to close cases and open cases at a pretty significant pace, and we actually anticipate a lot more. I may have commented on this before. We have dived deep into the worker misclassification cases, and we will probably have several hundred of these cases coming very soon. We have an investigator devoting a lot of her time now to it, as well as a full-time auditor that works on this. And so it is a high priority, but we are going to be seeing a lot more of these cases. When Joseph Sharp was here, as many of you remember him, he did a lot of these cases as well, and they kind of trickled in and contributed a lot of the volume at the time of the audit cases. But we're going to be seeing a lot more of these cases concerning worker misclassification cases. So that's kind of the outline of what's happened. Any questions on that? Any questions on the report?
Just backing up to your statement on the misclassification. So has it not been priority, or is that why we're going to see an uptick, or have we seen the misclassification come back?
It's always been there, and it's been a priority. We've recently come into some information from some inside sources that has allowed us to get into a lot of different areas. So when we can get inside people providing us information, it can make an investigation explode into hundreds of investigations. And so that's what we had in one particular case, where we had an investigator stop by, check a job site. We then started digging. We got a witness to provide us, or we got a contractor to provide us some information that then led us to hundreds of cases of worker misclassification. So it's
good. Thank you for back into it.
And the investigation is
exploding. Yeah, it is going to explode. I'll just compound on that. Chris is team has really been helpful with that, and we got together and came up with a new plan on how to attack this instead of going to the job site. So we'll keep that kind of under wraps for now, but it's going to be fun.
The other thing I should mention is that we are taking action also on people that advertise on Facebook and KSL Classifieds. I believe we actually have a guy on the agenda. We're going to be assessing an $18,000 fine to him for advertising on Facebook multiple times with prior offenses. So we're not taking the approach where if somebody goes and advertises, it's a $500 fine. We will fine them for advertising as a contractor without a license for every time they do it. So every Facebook post could cost someone up to $1,000 if they're not licensed. So we take it very seriously. We have investigators and auditors checking Facebook, but there are so many people out there doing it. It's
crazy.
It's crazy.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. So.
When you see the result of that, with the money being turned out and everything else that you're dealing with on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Thank you for your diligence in addressing that.
Yeah, thank you so much. Okay, well, let's move into the rule hearing. We can. And do I tell the time it was you?
Yeah, why don't you, before we start with Mr. or Judge Dibb, I just wanted to make a comment about this rule filing. This is on the electrician's rule for R15655B and also on the plumber's licensing act rule changes for R15655C. The division has decided to withdraw and not pursue the changes at present for the Electrical Licensing Act R15655B and to send that back to the Electricians Board for further discussion and review. But the Plumbers Licensing Act rule, we are continuing to maintain and going to proceed, pending any comments under R15655C. However, because it was noticed and it didn't provide the division enough time to cancel the proceedings, there may be people who have attended here to comment on both rules, and so we would still take any comment that anyone wants to provide on those rules based on how Judge did in his hearing. So
you'd like to hear comments on both rules?
I think we would still like to proceed with comments on both rules because it was noticed that way. Yeah.
Okay. Since the plumber's rule is going to proceed, let's address that one first. This is the Plumber's Licensing Act rule. This is the time for the public hearing on this rule, and I'm the administrative law judge assigned to conduct this hearing. It's my responsibility to assure that all that want to comment and speak to the rule will have an opportunity to do so. The rule has been as presented, and I'm just going to touch lightly on a couple of the things regarding the rule, and I'm going to then defer to Chris Rogers if he has additional things he would like to comment on. The Plumbers Licensing Board Construction Services Commission desired to make some clarifications to remove some of the requirements that the board and commission found to be a little bit onerous and outdated. Just commenting on a couple of the rules, there's an amendment to Section 15655C-302B that extends the 25-day waiting period between taking a test if you have a failed exam to 30 days. A rather liberating amendment is that the exams that need to be taken and passed can be taken at any time. There has been in place a one-year rolling clock rule where you had to pass all exams within one 12-month period, and that is no longer required. And there's also an amendment to the definition of unprofessional conduct in 15655C-501. The rule, this is the public hearing, which has been noticed. It was noticed for the building across the street, but since the elevators haven't been working for a while, we've moved it here. So we will keep this open for a few more moments in case someone wanders from the building across the plaza here. But the rule may become effective as early as February 7th of this year. The comment period will remain open until 5 o'clock tomorrow if there are additional comments that are to be made. Let me ask you, Mr. Rogers, have there been any written comments submitted?
I have not received any written comments on the Plumhead licensing rule, Mr. Duncan. I don't believe the division has received any written comments to the plumber rule.
Okay, before we open it up to comment from others, two things. One is that by rule, those that want to speak to these amendments are to sign a sheet providing your address and your relevant affiliation. That is, if you're with an association or some organization. If you're just a concerned citizen, you put concerned citizen on that, but I'd like you to each sign in to this before you make any comment. Chris, do you want to say anything else about this rule?
I don't have anything to say. Mr. Duncan, do you have anything to say about the rule?
I think that captures everything.
Okay. So let's open this up to public comment. Is there anyone that would like to speak to the plumber's rule? Are all these electricians? Delightful. And if no commission members do, let me just talk about the other rule, since it's quite similar, and we'll take comments about that if there are comments present. Obviously, since the rule has been withdrawn, there's going to be an extended comment period on whatever the rule changes might be. That rule is a similar rule in that it has the same kind of changes, including the one with regard to when you have to take exams and when you have to pass exams not in the within a one-year period. This is 156-55B. Have you received any written comments on that rule?
I have received a written comment on that forwarded to me from the division director. I believe Steve Duncombe has also received written comments on it.
I received four written comments.
Could you just summarize briefly what those comments, just briefly what those are, and then we'll open it up to public comment.
With respect to 55B-1021, addresses low voltage. Apparently, including that language has created some unintended consequences for some people in different industries. So we need some more time to vet that with the board.
Okay. And were all four comments related to that issue? Okay. We now open that up to the public. If there's any comment by any members of the public present that would like to speak to that rule again, this rule, because it's being withdrawn, will be extended. There'll be another comment. Any comment on that rule? Yes, sir.
For you, you have to make a comment.
Commit you here before you do that?
I signed something?
Yeah.
Avoid that means responsibility.
Yeah, I know. That's
just where we know who you are.
We're trying to make that you responsible here. State your full name for us here.
Okay, so my name is Terrence Ripple. I'm here representing specifically a company called Americom Technologies. Let me do this here.
Let me just get you a seat so you're close to my microphone as I'm recording this.
Okay. I can have the same as well. I don't have that on the side.
Thank you. Proceed with your comments.
So, I one of the written comments you received was from our company on that, and I think the assessment is correct, so possibly unintended consequences on that. The intent of the rule, I can't speak on. I don't know what that is. But I do know how it will affect a great number of contractors here in the state, state of Utah, from small to the very large, from independent people all the way through CenturyLink and the Department of Technology Services for the state of Utah. And that centers around identifying low voltage at the 50-volt level and striking the language that ties that to the NEC. I think it's a dangerous thing to do for both an economic impact and life safety impact as well. Voltage is not the proper peg for what would be considered low voltage type work. Anything that's happening in our network world today, all of our wireless access points, cameras, all draw more than 50 or take more than 50 volts to function and operate. They're all between 50 and 57 right now, and that's even an increase even more. Telephone line voltage for Ring goes up to 90 volts. So by limiting it that, it's an inappropriate place for that to be, and it needs to be left pegged to the National Electric Code as to what defines a power limiting circuit.
Thank you. Any comment or response to that comment? Clarifying information. And the spelling of your last name?
R-I-F-F-L-E.
R-I-F-F-L-E. Thank you very much. Appreciate your participation today. Anyone else desiring to comment with regard to the rule?
I have a question. Joseph Jensen from the commission. Does it have any language about the amperage, or is it only the voltage?
Only the voltage.
Voltage. Just trying to look at the voltage.
The amperage is what gets you.
I will point you to that.
Not to get too deep into these electrically, but you can have a 48-volt battery backup system that draws so many amps and destroys anything that happens to come across these appropriately. Or at the same time, we live in this awesome state that can get quite dry in the wintertime. Anyone that had a static shock at home, that's 12 to 14,000 volts. Annoying, but not dangerous. So voltage is not the right thing, you're correct. It's that combination between the two that defines that. And the NEC does a good job defining what a power limited circuit is.
Thank you, Dan, for your comment. We will close this portion of this meeting and we'll close the rule hearing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Commissioner, it's been nice being with you. Could I be excused?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Judge. So we'll move into the action items.
Mr. Chair, a few modifications to the agenda, if I may. We would propose to amend the agenda to include Howard Plumbing Mechanical under C, orders amending probation, Giles Construction LLC to move from D, stipulations to C. Orders amending probation, ending probation, or orders to set aside and reinstate license, and then to add add Tomahawk Painting LLC to D, stipulations and other stipulated orders, and to amend the agenda to include Linear Edge Construction Inc. under D. And I just need a motion to amend that agenda, and then I can proceed.
We have a motion.
I'll make that motion.
A second.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So be it.
So be it. Okay. Then we'll do this like we usually do. So, Mr. Chair, the division is recommending the following action items: that findings of fact, conclusions of law, and orders enter against Oak Brook Builders, LLC, Barbosa Dreams, LLC, Bradley Scott Smith, and as an amended order, and Rice Asset Management LLC, DBA, JAR Real Estate Development, that orders enter in favor of, and these are based on the, and the orders enter in favor of the following: for orders of dismissal under Action Item B, Solar Installers, Inc., L&X Construction, LLC, Brio Homes, LLC, Ensign Electric, LLC, and that under C, orders amending probation or ending probation or order to set aside and reinstate license be entered in favor of AGL Concrete and Foundation LLC, Signal Energy LLC, AA Specialty Industries LLC, Rise Construction Inc., Howard Plumbing and Mechanical, Giles Construction LLC, and that stipulations and other stipulated orders enter in favor of True Homes and Construction, Inc., Make It Happen Welding, LLC, Martinez Drywall, Inc., Hewitt Contracting, Inc., Nathan Arnold Phipps, Smart Company, Cameron X. Hafen, Eagle Mountain Construction, Aspen Tree Homes, LLC, Cache Valley Remodeling, LLC, BP Drywall Contractors, LLC, Total Quality Assurance Cable Specialist, Inc., Green Valley Construction, LLC, Strength Drywall, LLC, I think that's Jorge Luis Robles, Mechanical Pneumatic Systems Enterprise, LLC, Jimmy Avila, JB Plastering, LLC, Giles Construction, as you recall, was stricken and moved to the other provision, that orders enter in favor of, under D stipulations, Tomahawk Painting, LLC, and Linear Edge Construction, Inc., and that default orders under E and failure to respond in other similar cases enter against the following: Houston D. Howe, Intermountain Specialty Contracting, LLC, Advanced Exteriors, LLC, Taylor Built Homes, LLC, Ace Fire, LLC, Above and Beyond Construction, Inc., JB Footings and Foundations, LLC, Jeroma Stone, LLC, Radical Carpentry, LLC, Axiom Commercial, LLC, D&M Construction, LLC, National Greenhouse Company, Inc., Eddie Lopez Construction, LLC, Josh Randall Skadel, DBA One Man Handyman Construction and Design, and Building Pros, LLC. The following: J&A Solutions, LLC, should be stricken. B&S Drywall, Inc., should be stricken. And Farside Construction, LLC, should be stricken because the division is further reviewing that matter. Mr. Chair, those are the recommended orders of the division pursuant to the commission's precedent and previous instructions on these and direction on these orders.
So, motion. So can we have a motion to approve all these?
Mr. Chair, I'm Russell Emmerle. I make a motion to accept the actions as presented by the commission and identified on the agenda A through E.
Thank you. Second?
I'm Dale Thompson. I second that.
Any discussion before we vote? No discussion. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Any opposed? Some of you know this, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item, if you're okay with it, is the discussion items.
Yes, sir.
So let's start with the – if we could do them out of order because we have the electrical mechanics people here. They can comment on it. Why don't I briefly – I believe we circulated the rule. If not, the rule proposal is to extend the temporary license that's provided to elevator mechanics from 90 days to 180 days. That's what the current rule discussion was based on some of the issues that Robin Barkdahl, the bureau manager over the elevator mechanics, as well as the industry discussed. But I don't know, Robin, did you want to talk more about this particular
we do have the elevator industry here as well, but it was brought to our attention that there's quite a shortage of licensed elevator mechanics in the state right now. There's a temporary provision in the rule for a license for 90 days, and then it can be extended once for an additional 90 days. The elevator industry is telling us that that is just not long enough, that they believe that the 3,500 hours that are required for the temporary license makes the elevator mechanic safe to be licensed temporarily until they have their 6,000 hours to test. We did meet with Mr. Anderson, who's with the local union of elevators, and agree that a six-month or 180-day temporary license that could be renewed once would get temporary closer to their 6,000 hours that are required to become a licensed mechanic. That's where we started in December. the rule was circulated. I did hear from Mr. Anderson last night that they may have an additional concern. So, but that's just to address the shortage of elevator mechanics, get them to the point where they can become licensed, but yet still work under the supervision, and not direct supervision, but under the supervision of either the elevator contractor or another elevator mechanic.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Anderson's here if you'd like to hear from him about some of the concerns that he had about the rule.
Hi, good morning. So these are some of the concerns. I just took over for Local 38, IUBC, International Union of Elevator Constructors. And some of the concerns that coming into this process is I needed to set up some temporary mechanics. And so we haven't had any temporary mechanics for a long time. But going over the rules and looking at it, the state law says right now that a TM can be set up with 3,550 hours, correct? That's how it's written in our code book, or in the code right now. So they can get a temporary license right now, it's good for 90 days. That would give them 520 hours, which can be renewed, talking to Robin, for another 90 days, which would put them at the 4,590 hours. Right, they still can't take a state license because they don't have the 6,000 hours. So at this point, they're between a third and a fourth year apprentice. Most likely they've been putting elevators in, some guys longer than that, just depending on their schooling and stuff. But the problem we have is that it falls short of that 6,000 hours. So companies, they set a guy up, right, and they set him up for 3 months, set him back down because it gets busy. So the issue we're going to have, and we would have had this during the Olympics in 2001, because at that time, me as an apprentice, I was 1 year in the trade with a significant background. And I was set up all the way through the Olympics until I got my mechanics license. But with this code change here, these apprentices aren't going to be able to be temporary mechanics, and the company won't be able to use them as temporary mechanics until they get 6,000 hours. So we have a shortfall from the 4,590 hours to the 6,000 hours before they can take the state license exam.
The reason we're bringing it before the commission for discussion is if any of this rule change would have to come through the commission to have a hearing, just like we had to change the rule. Robin and I discussed it. We felt comfortable with the 6 month, 180 days. And I think to respond to the concern that Mr. Anderson brings up about the lack of sufficient, this gap basically between the hours. But the danger that we are not necessarily a danger, but one of the things we want to be careful of is making a temporary, extend too far into a licensure, right? And so we probably wouldn't want a temporary person to have a temporary license too long. That's the concern. Because if 3,550 hours is the benchmark to get a temporary, and the more we extend that, it's starting to encroach upon the idea that, well, maybe that should be the limit instead of 6,000. You know, why don't we just drop the limit to 3,500 and then they can just get a license? So this is the time for the commission to discuss that and give the division direction if the commission's comfortable with making the change or any other change on this particular aspect of the rule.
So I have a couple feelings about that, if that's all right. So I have five elevators going in currently. And elevators right now are the bane of my existence. There's no available people to get our elevators in, and they're slowing the entire process down. It's crushing us. I mean, we're talking 3 months delays on buildings with everything done. It's ridiculous. And in my experience in the 20 years, we're doing far less machining on site. We're not fabricating any parts. This is all components. It's literally come in, install, mount to the wall, and follow the instructions. So I think the whole thing has been simplified and systemized to the point that I don't know if 6,000 hours is needed. We're not, and I think the fail-safe on these elevators is probably an overkill now. I mean, the likelihood of anything ever coming down or crashing is almost impossible. I just don't see the risk anymore. It's not like the movies where there's cables that can cut and people drop to their deaths. It's just not. So my frustration is I can't get buildings done because there's nobody that can come out to a job site because they don't have enough people. So that's a problem, a big problem.
I have a comment, Joseph Jensen, Commissioner. So I was doing the math while you're going through all this, and it seems to me that if you don't do the 180 days, then you're kind of taking a mechanic in training at 5,000 hours. He probably has more experience than a guy at 3,500 hours, and you're giving the guy at 3,500 hours more ability to work than the guy at 5,000 hours. You're kind of punishing the guys that are 5,000 hours. I like your idea. I can't comment on what you're saying, but I like the idea of going to 180 hours and maybe say, at 180 hours.
You mean days? 180 days.
Yeah, excuse me. 180 days. When you reach 6,000 hours, then it says, why aren't you making the leap to a licensed mechanic, a full-blown mechanic? So I like 180 days to give the guy that has more experience the opportunity to keep working versus the guy that doesn't, and sort of punish them for that gap in time.
Can I say something on that? So in our elevator industry, the way that we work is that in order to be set up, right, we're not setting up a guy that has 3,500 hours in, right? The only time we're setting up that guy that has 3,500 hours in is a guy, so we set up our fourth-year apprentices first, right? Which typically those guys have 6,000 hours. So those are the first guys that we're going to set up as mechanics. Our second guys that we set up as mechanics, which we call our third-year guys. And typically those guys have around 4,000 hours in the elevator industry, right? And then we go to our second-year guys, and they have around 3,000 to 3,500 hours in, right? So we don't set up a second-year guy or a guy with 3,500 hours in before a guy that has 5,000 or 6,000 hours in.
Right.
But we do run into an instance when we're really busy putting elevators in, right? Because we have a timeline. We have a problem with getting them inspected. Right now they're a month out of getting them inspected, right? And buildings are trying to build, and so they want us to be able to throw elevators into their building so that their electricians and their plumbers and their sheetrockers and everybody else. And so we run on a shortage that we set up all of our fourth-year guys, we set up all of our third-year guys, now we're running into our third-year guys that have 3,500 hours in, right? But if they say we're busy for a long period of time, that those guys are set up, what happens to a company that guy they set up at 3,500 hours, right? In 2.5 years, or not even that, in 6 months, that company now cannot keep that guy set up as a temporary mechanic.
Right?
So now the issue we have is now these buildings can't put their buildings in because we don't have the manpower to set guys up because they've always gone through their time period of being a temporary mechanic. The only thing we're asking is that we extend that. So if we run into that situation, that those guys can continue to put those elevators in, so we're not prolonging putting buildings in.
In 180 days, we could do that.
Well, my math,
because what I was saying, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you have the opportunity to take a 3,500 hour or a second year guy and make him a temporary mechanic.
Correct.
And that's what it gives you, that opportunity. And when you've given him that opportunity, it's not everybody's going to do the same thing to you. Everybody's going to take the fourth-year guy. Somebody's going to take the second-year guy. And so you have that opportunity to have a lag of time. When if in 180 days, all guys at a 3,500-hour, 3,550-hour should be, at 180 days, they should be making the leap to try and become a full mechanic to the temporary.
So, in my math, right, if you work 3,550 hours and you get set up, right, in 90 days, the way it is right now, in 90 days, that guy's going to have 520 hours. He can renew his license for another 90 days, which is 180 days, right? At that point, he only has 4,500 hours, right? So how does that company get that guy to go from 4,500 to 6,000 hours?
That's the problem.
That's 1,500 hours short.
That's 180 days. 180 days will get him to 6,000 hours.
No one gets a place.
It's 180 days, and then if you renew that, 180 days. We came up with that because he felt like it would address it, but now he's concerned that maybe it won't.
So can I make a comment? The So in my mind, take it for what it's worth. It seems that we want the public to be safe, right? We want our elevators to be safe. Whether they're busy or not shouldn't change whether something's safe, right? So it should be safe whether they're busy, and it should be safe whether they're not busy. We shouldn't change. It doesn't seem in my mind that we should be changing the line just because they're busy. It should be, well, this person sufficiently knows what they know what to do. They're trained, and therefore let's draw the line here. So I guess what I would ask him is 3,500 hours or 3,550 hours, is that sufficient for someone to work safely? If so, the commission may want to consider. I think that's what Mr. Axel said.
Yeah, can I make a subjective observation about that?
I have my hand up first, okay? Why don't I just give them another 90 days? Because if they're still in good shape after 180 days, why would they be less safe 90 more days?
Right,
that would give them the amount that they need to have.
Well, let me just make an observation, and maybe this will take into context. And maybe I'm not based on any investigation or anything, but my feeling is the elevator industry has always created major barriers to entry. They don't want anybody else in there. They don't want any other groups coming in. So 6,000 hours seems to be the magic number, and that makes everybody else that wants to maybe set up a shop or something, they can't get in. That's too many hours to get in. Now the problem is it's biting them in the back. They got more work than they can handle. They got everybody yelling at them, and they can't get it done. The reality is, in my opinion, 3,500 hours is plenty. And you could have these guys do what they need to do at 3,500 hours, learn what they need to learn in 3,500 hours. I've watched 36 elevators installed in my own buildings over my career. I think 3,500 hours is plenty. That's a personal opinion. But I think the 6,000 hours is an arbitrary barrier to entry that was created at one time to limit those that could come into the market.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Prior to, so 6,000 hours is the 6,000 hours is the hour rate. It's where you become a licensed mechanic.
No. So we require in the elevator trade, we require a mechanic to have 8,000 hours before he can take the mechanic exam. The state of Utah, because we had to bring the numbers down for non-union companies, so that they could come into the state of Utah with 6,000 hours of on-the-job training and be able to take the state licensing code, which we're 100% okay with that, because our guys, by the time they get 6,000 hours, they've been sufficiently trained at that time to be able to install their own elevator, and we were perfectly happy with those gentlemen to come into the state and take that written test or however it's done when they have the 6,000 hours.
The 8,000 hours is the union, right?
8,000 hours is the union.
Right. So but my question, I guess my question is two-part. My question is, at 3,500 hours, they can become they can get a temporary license.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a vehicle as written to get them from the 3,500 hours as a temporary? So the guy comes in the day he's got 3550, he goes in and applies for his temporary license. Do we have a vehicle as written to get that person from 3550 to 6,000, or is there a lag in between?
There's a gap.
The thing we're not looking at, and I'm sorry to bring this up. Today we're not looking to lower the time from 6,000 to a lower number. Today we're looking at trying to make the vehicle make it from 3550 to 6,000, right?
We could do either.
You could do either.
It's up to us.
That's why we're looking for a
contact.
Okay.
We have the latitude to do what we feel is right.
I'd like to make a statement here. So what you're saying is that at 3550 hours, you're considering that guy qualified to be a mechanic.
Temporary
doesn't matter. At 3550, you're saying this guy can be a mechanic and do the same work that a guy with 8,000 hours could do. Is that what I'm hearing?
So typically, I mean, when I got...
At 3550, you're saying that this guy can qualify to be a mechanic.
Correct.
But as a plumber, that's like saying as an apprentice, a second-year apprentice, we're going to say you can be a journeyman plumber now. So once I've told him he can be a journeyman plumber, how do you go back and say, well, after 90 days, that changes? So in my mind, if technology is such that they only need 3,550 hours to become a journeyman mechanic, then what does temporary have to do with it? Let's make the change to let a guy take the test, be a mechanic at $3,550.
And I think what he's getting at is if the temporary license can be extended all the way until they become licensed, they're effectively licensed at $3,550.
Right. Well, temporary means he's working on somebody else's security.
No.
It's a full license.
You're just playing with words at that point. You might as well just make it $3,500.
Yeah, because in my profession, if he's in training,
it's not like an intern.
Somebody else's under somebody else's mentoring or somebody else's.
So you have to understand too that these guys that have 3,500 hours are installing elevators. They're not turning that elevator over to the public, right? They're still having a journeyman who has been in the trade for typically 8 years or longer to come in after he's installed that elevator and adjust it. We call them adjusters. And that guy will come in and he'll go over the elevator and he does all the safety checks on the elevators. He goes completely through the elevator to make sure that it was installed and is ready for the public to ride that elevator.
Can the elevator be ridden without the journeyman?
No.
Okay, so that's...
Well, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's in statute or rule that requires that.
Because
you know if that's...
I'm sorry, I was reading something.
Yeah. About whether an adjuster basically has to check the work of a temporary licensee. I don't think that's the case. That's not in the rule or the statute. It's an industry practice, but it's not required.
And you have to remember in this industry that the elevators are not a single point of inspection. Mm-hmm. This is a multi-inspection throughout the duration and use of the elevator. It's inspected by the state on an annual basis forever with punch lists every year. So it's not, you know, these things don't go unchecked. They don't go unsupervised or unwashed or unmaintained.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
In the 90 days or 100 days, how many elevators are one of these temporary licensees going to install?
In 90 days?
Yeah.
Depending if it's a trash and elevator, typically the trash, maybe one.
In 90 days?
In 90 days.
So elevator installing 3-4 per year?
Trash and elevators. So a hydraulic elevator, right? You can put a hydraulic elevator in a building in 2 weeks.
And the vast majority of all the elevators that you ride out here are hydraulic. Everything under 4 or 5 stops is hydraulic, chances are.
So you could do 20.
And that's kind of changing.
It should change because hydraulics are...
But we still put a lot, in Salt Lake, we still put a lot of hydraulic elevators in. You know, so they're not...
They're a good price.
Traction, you know, 15-story buildings and that. But it's a small...
So under this recommendation, they could do up to 26. Right, but under a temporary license for 1 year, 2 6-month periods, they can do 26.
I want to chime in too and be respectful. I'm very familiar with the elevator training and apprenticeship. I'm not looking to water down what's there. The ask here is a temporary extension to catch up and meet some of the shortcomings. The industry itself is very unique and it encompasses all sorts of facets of construction. I'm not as liberal as you are to say that the safeties, the precaution to install one should be watered down in any way, shape, or form. So, I understand the ask here, and in favor of extending a little bit more time on a temporary basis to have some shortcomings right now.
Would the temporary meet the shortcomings?
I don't know. I can't
say it's temporary.
And as I said before, we're not setting up a guy, a second and a half or 2.5-year guy in the trade. We're not setting that guy up first. We're setting up a 4th-year guy and a 3rd-year guy, who has 4,000, which under this provisions was great for that guy, right? So that guy at 4,000 hours or even at 4,500 hours in 180 days, he's going to get to the 6,000 hours and be able to come in and take that state licensing test. We're talking about the guy that come in because we're really super busy and we're fast-tracking buildings now. and we're setting up guys because we're just having a shortfall. We have 100 and 200 guys in my local, and that's for Utah and Idaho. So we take care of them. We go into Wyoming, we go into Nevada to put elevators in.
So how many? So your local installs elevators. How many non-union contractors install elevators?
One.
There are about 150 licensed elevator mechanics in the state, and I think Robert said there are about 125 with
workshops.
So while your organization does it a certain way, well, I think we need to be concerned with making sure legislation or that our rule covers everybody, whether it's union or not.
That's why we're trying not to change the 6,000 hours. We think that's a great number. With 6,000 hours, you'll come and take that test. By then, you're electrically, you come to an electrical program. You've gone through enough. You need welding, need stuff. And so even with that 6,000 hours, we have to have a new certification of schooling that we have to give to the guy to bring in to show the state before they can take that state license exam. So we're not trying to change the 6,000. We're just trying to get from that 4,500 hours to the 6,000 hours, right? Which is about 9 months worth of work. Maybe a year at the most to get to that shortfall.
Mr. Chair, I just need some direction from the commission on where you think this rule change should go.
So, can I say something, Mr. Chair? Sorry. I think that it is a very valid discussion for the commission to have if we're at the right number of hours. But probably for today, if anything, this change from 90 to 180 days. If it does anything, it would help there be more people available to do the work. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes.
Because what happens now if somebody runs out of their temporary extension? They can't do the work. They can't do it. So I think for now, one thing probably everybody can agree on is that if without the debate of the hours happening, this at least facilitates a little bit more help with elevator needs in the state. So with that, it probably sounds like there's unanimity that we can at least grant the change from 90 to 180. I think that's what I'm hearing.
And if that's the commission's direction, we can definitely go that way, propose that rule, and then have further discussion about the hours if that's what you would like to do.
The fear, too, is the 180 won't get all the way to the
But it'll buy us time until we can meet again.
So that gives them a year. The 180.
It gets us another 30 days to digest this, and we can bring it back to us.
So everybody but that 3,500 guy, and when we had our discussion, you told me that was fairly rare. But most of these guys had 4,000 hours by the time you were setting up for the temporary, and then you're buying them a full year's experience of another 2,000 hours.
It's rare when we're sending 3,500 hour guys. It's not saying it can't happen, because it can happen. When I was in the elevator trade 23 years ago, it happened. We were at a significant growth at that time before the Olympics, and they needed anybody who could put an elevator in. I came from a background that my family owned a machine shop. I've done work on machinists and that kind of stuff my whole entire life since I was 12 years old, working in our family machine shop, right? So I had a good background, solid background of putting stuff together and how to put stuff together. And they set me up with 1 year's experience. Now, did I turn that elevator over to the public? No. But did I install the elevator? Did I install all the components of the elevator? And somebody came back behind me and checked on my work to make sure that all the work was there. And so what I did, this is Kevin Sullivan. He's from the Work Preservation Clinic. He's not with the local. He's kind of the one.
The labor management cooperative between the elevator company and the elevator.
Yeah. And they're the ones that actually came in and did this originally. And I think it kind of got missed at that point.
Well, the reason for the temporary license is to meet a need when there's not enough license holders in a particular area. That's the number that you need to get a license. It's extraordinary circumstances in Utah where there's a lot of work and there aren't a lot of elevator instructors that do the work. And so to try to meet that need, we had a temporary clause. So I think this is the first time this happened in the 25 years ago that Robert's talking about, where there's been a need for temporary mechanics.
Mr. Chair, I think you're... Oh, did you? Robin, did you?
Chris, I was just going to say, as I thought about this and after getting Bob's email last night, it could, we should do the 180 days plus a renewal, 180 days, and maybe even have a clause that at the end of that period, if temporary is still required, they could bring it to the commission. They're still actively involved. They're still pursuing their NEAT certification. They're still getting their hours. So it's not like they've dropped out. They could maybe have another extension. Because there would only be a few people that would fall into that void, a very few people. If they've got 4,000 hours, they'd make it to 6 in a year if they stayed actively involved.
So any discussion on doing the additional 180-day extension, 90-day extension?
It's
or 180 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
From 90 to 180.
Yeah, from 90 to 180. I mean, any discussion, any objection from the commission?
I'm comfortable with it. If nobody else wants to say anything, I will make a motion to change the temporary license for the elevator constructors from 90 days to 180 days with another renewal option of 180 days after the first one is.
Merlin Taylor, I would second that motion.
Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay, just so everyone's clear, that doesn't mean the rule has changed yet. What it means is the commission's made a recommendation to change the rule, so no, you're good. Your motion was fine. So I will prepare, in discussion with the director in the division, prepare a rule change, and then we can proceed with the modification.
Can I ask one more question? And I don't mean to start the discussion all over again. It's just 6,000 hours. I like the 6,000-hour benchmark. How does the 6,000-hour, and I like what we've done here today, obviously, because everybody voted on it, but voted to agree with it. How does it compare 6,000 hours compared with the other states, the other 49 states? Is everybody roughly, is all the other states about it?
I don't know the other states. Robin, do you even know the other states?
Some of them have 8,000.
Yeah. A lot have 8,000. There's 38 states that have elevated mechanical licensing. We can get that number, try and get the information.
It's kind of like a 4-year apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. 8,000 hours.
Okay.
So Utah's already 6,000.
If you're taking a temporary mechanic at 3550, you shouldn't punish them. If we're already doing that, you shouldn't punish them for starting at 3550.
So in follow-up with Mark's comment, you have decided to pursue the 180-day extension. Do you want to have further discussion about the 6,000-hour requirement? We can invite them back. Do you want to have discussion about that or not?
Seems like we need to. Cause it seems like we're leaving. We haven't totally taken care of the issue, haven't we?
So what I will do is I will put it on the agenda for a future meeting, and I will invite Mr. Anderson and what was your name again?
Sullivan.
Thank you. I will invite Mr. Anderson and Mr. Sullivan and anybody else who wants to come, and we can have further discussion about that issue.
And the reason why I'm passionate about this, or I have feelings about it, is recently I had a phone call with one of my vendors. And I said we're 8 weeks late on our elevators, and then they said, well, we simply can't get guys, there's not enough guys, and we have a lot of good guys, but we can't let them do it. That was the comment. And I said, well, come on, is there anything you can do? And they said, well, you're only one of 250 elevators going out. And I said, but you're doing two of them for me. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, you're two of 250. So it changed nothing. I mean, the frustration across the board on commercial contractors right now is ridiculous. We can't provide. And a lot of it is, if you talk to the guys on site, they're like, I can't let this guy do it because he's not licensed yet. He knows everything. And anyway, there you go.
Can I say something? So on the 6,000 hours, the reason why we were okay with the 6,000, because we like the 8,000 hours, don't get me wrong, right? Because our schooling system takes that long to become a mechanic. The reason why we did the benchmark of 6,000 hours is because we had some non-union, we have the church that have elevators that do elevator work. And their schooling system is a little different than what our schooling system is. And so their benchmark was 6,000 hours. And so we were okay with that 6,000-hour benchmark.
And that's why we did it at that time.
And we will invite you and them and anybody else who wants to attend for the further discussion on the agenda. If the commission, if that's what the commission wants. Okay. Mr. Chair, the last item of these items was the legislative update of this packet right here. I just wanted to give you a brief update and start this a little earlier. The legislative session just started a few days ago on Monday, as many of you probably know. I wanted to talk about at least three bills that have an impact on the construction industry as a whole. The first one is this damage to underground facilities amendments. I don't know if you're aware of this. Basically, this is under the Public Utilities Code. It really impacts excavators, but what it does is it makes it unprofessional. Actually, I think it says unlawful. Unlawful conduct if they violate the provisions of this code. So if they, it's a blue stakes law, so if they don't do their blue stakes requirement, we can actually take licensure action on an excavator if they violate the provisions of this blue stakes law. Okay, so I mean, that's really the only change that involves Doppel with respect to this underground facilities change. So we could take licensure action on a contractor. Yeah.
So how does it? That's the only. Currently, it's a contractor. It's an underground facility. You can't take licensure action.
At least it's not specifically listed. I mean, we could take action because it's a violation of a state code, but they are specifically saying that Doppel, it is de facto unlawful conduct, a violation of state of the state of our unlawful conduct provisions if you don't follow the blue stakes law and dig and hit a pipe and or a cable line or whatever else and damage it, and it's de facto unlawful conduct. That's the bill that's currently being presented on the Hill. The industry leaders, so all the cable companies, the gas line company, the blue stakes guys, the contractors had a meeting with Representative Handy. I attended, and there was a lot of discussion about this. There were actually a lot of discussions about increasing the penalty, revocation for a certain degree, automatic suspension. They decided to leave it because Doppel has a lot of flexibility in terms of administrative action and the actions that we take, and they said, okay, well, we at least want to just say that by not following the blue stakes law, it is unlawful conduct, and so then Doppel can take action.
But it doesn't increase liability if they do follow
the doesn't, blue stakes. Well, at least from the Doppel's perspective, there is some changes of the notices and if you are familiar with it, the difference between the operator liability and the excavator liability and the arbitration proceedings, they have clarified, so that may increase the liability in that respect. But with respect to Doppel and the Construction Services Commission, I just wanted you to be aware that it is making it so that if there's a blue stakes violation under for an excavator, it is unlawful conduct.
It's not just excavators. Anybody that's at the ground, right?
Any person licensed under this chapter. So any person that is, has a contractor's license,
like a landscaper,
that violates the blue stakes law, it can be found unlawful conduct.
And your financial penalties are pretty good still. I mean, your $5,000 possibly up per incident up to $100,000. I mean, these are big boys.
But they don't change. They have those penalties are already.
They're already in.
Yeah. I don't think. And I'm going to just give you one example. From yesterday, I don't think there should be a change because you're not putting any weight. I think the weight should actually be put on the blue stakers because I had a blue staker yesterday take a line from 5 feet to the west, and I've had him out there for a month. We've been blue staking this line over and over and over again. Can't find it. And then he decides to do something different with his machine, and now he's 6 feet east of his mark, right in the middle where we're trying to put a power pole. There's kind of a wiggle area there. If you're going to put any weight on anything, you need to put it on these blue staking companies because they're running around and they're just saying, well, they're getting away with a lot of things. They're getting away with people that aren't experienced out there blue staking. I don't think the contractor. I think there's already a lot of weight on the contractor for getting it right with when he has blue stakes there
And he has to worry about the guy coming out and saying,
my assumption here would be, this would be as if you didn't call Blue State.
Yeah.
If Blue State comes out and marks it, and you say, outside of their marketing, you hit something, and they mark it wrong.
I just hate to give more away because there's a contractor gets nailed. Well,
the nice thing about this is it says it's unlawful conduct, but Doppel still has the flexibility. I mean, if Blue Stakes went out there and mismarked it, I don't see how we would say, I don't know how we would say that's the contractor's fault.
Because Blue Stakes always comes back around, and the contractor's following the letter of the law, and Blue Stakes always comes back around and says, like in that instance, that is more than 24 inches from his previous mark. It's three times as much. And, you know, is he going to say, well, I had it marked over here this day, and a month later I marked it over here, and then I just think there's enough weight in it already.
So that's HB 162, Representative Handy. I will keep an eye on it, but you also want to keep an eye on that if you're interested in that particular provision. HB 90 is the next bill that applies to every profession in Doppel, including contractors. And the only reason I bring it up is because it would alter a little bit how we do our applications. It's a prejudgment. It would allow for Doppel to prejudge, a method to prejudge criminal conduct before they apply. So they submit an application for Doppel to review their criminal conduct to then give them the green light of whether they can continue. And I think the reason for this is so that people don't spend a lot of money in a trade, training or go to college for some long training and rack up a big tuition bill and then figure out, oh, no, you're disqualified, you had felonies. We could have told you years ago, but you didn't apply. So this provides them an opportunity, if this bill passes, would provide an applicant the opportunity to apply to have their criminal conduct determined before they actually apply. So if this passes, it would create some different rules on how we apply for licensure. The next bill is probably the biggest change that you've probably already heard of. This is HB 187. This is Representative Schultz's bill. This bill eliminates the trade exam for general contractors. Okay? So I'll highlight the biggest changes. It eliminates the trade exam for general contractors. It adds a second course. So we have a 25-hour course. There will now be a 5-hour course, pre-licensure course, that only the authorized providers can provide, the Home Builders, AGC, Weber State currently. And they are reducing the experience requirement. So currently we have 2 years of experience. One of them has to be supervisory. The bill eliminates the supervisory requirement. So you just have to have 2 years of experience, the laws and rules exam, no trade exam, and you can be a general contractor. That's HB 187 in a nutshell.
And we worry about elevators.
So that's the biggest. HB 187 is the biggest change to contractor licensing if it passes. Wanted to let you know, and I'll keep you updated on its progress. So that's it, Mr. Chair. Unless there's any other questions or discussion, that's.
That was a wonderful meeting. Thank you. For our next meeting is scheduled, at least tentatively right now, for February 27, 2019.
We have the North Conference Room reserved, so it will be at the other building on the first floor, unless the elevators work. But I'm not keeping my fingers crossed. So
for sure.
Or am I? Yeah. Maybe they could fix it fast. But so at least we'll be at the first floor at our building.
We don't need a motion to close, do we?
I need a motion to adjourn.
May we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
Meeting is adjourned.
Love you.